It didn't put me to sleep. It had exactly the opposite effect. It woke me up. It gave me a hell of a buzz. It left me shaking with shock and excitement, because by the time I had finished, I knew exactly how they were getting their paper. I knew exactly where they were getting it from. I knew what had been in those air conditioner boxes last year. I didn't need to go up to Atlanta and look. I knew. I knew what Kleiner was stockpiling at his warehouse. I knew what all those trucks were bringing in every day. I knew what Joe's heading had meant, E unum pluribus. I knew why he'd chosen that reversed motto. I knew everything, with 24 hours still to go. The whole thing, from beginning to end, from top to bottom, from the inside out. And it was one hell of a clever operation. Old Professor Kelstein had said the paper was unobtainable, but Kleiner had proved him wrong. Kleiner had found a way of obtaining it, a very simple way. I jumped up from the desk and ran down to the basement, wrenched open the dryer door and pulled my clothes out, dressed, hopping from foot to foot on the concrete floor, left the towel where it fell, ran back up to the kitchen, loaded up my jacket with the things I was going to need, ran outside, leaving the splintered door swinging, ran over the gravel to the Bentley, started it up and threaded it backward down the drive, roared off down Beckman and squealed a left onto Main Street, gunned it through the silent town and out beyond the diner, howled another left onto the Warburton Road and pushed the stately old car along as fast as I dared. The Bentley's headlights were dim, 20-year-old design. The night was patchy. Dawn was hours away, and the last of the trailing storm clouds were scudding across the moon. The road was never quite straight. The camber was off, and the surface was lumpy and slick with storm water. The old car was sliding and wallowing, so I cut the speed back to a cruise. Figured it was smarter to take an extra 10 minutes than to go plowing off into a field. I didn't want to join Joe. I didn't want to be another Reacher brother who knew, but who was dead. I passed the copse of trees. It was just a darker patch against the dark sky. Miles away, I could see the perimeter lights of the prison. They were blazing out over the night landscape. I cruised past. Then for miles, I could see their glow in the mirror behind me. Then I was over the bridge, through Franklin, out of Georgia, into Alabama. I rushed past the old roadhouse Roscoe and I had been in, the pond. It was closed up and dark. Another mile, I was at the motel. I left the motor running and ducked into the office to rouse the night guy. "You got a guest called Finley here?" I asked him. He rubbed his eyes and looked at the register. 11, he said. The whole place had that night look on it, slowed down and silent and asleep. I found Finley's cabin, number 11. His police Chevy was parked up outside. I made a lot of noise banging on his door. Had to keep banging for a while. Then I heard an irritated groan. Couldn't make out any words. I banged some more. "Come on, Finley," I called.
"Who's there?"
I heard him shout. "It's Reacher," I said. "Open the damn door." There was a pause. Then the door opened. Finley was standing there. I'd woken him up. He was wearing a gray sweatshirt and boxer shorts. I was amazed. I realized I had expected him to be sleeping in his tweed suit with the moleskin vest. "What the hell do you want?" he said. "Something to show you," I told him. He stood yawning and blinking.
"What the hell time is it?" he said.
"I don't know," I said. 4 o'clock, 5 maybe. "Get dressed. We're going somewhere."
"Going where?" he said.
"Atlanta," I said. "Something to show you."
"What something?" he said. "Just tell me, can't you?"
"Get dressed, Finley," I said again. "Gotta go." He grunted, but he went to get dressed. Took him a while. 15 minutes, maybe. He disappeared into the bathroom, went in there looking like a normal sort of a guy, just woken up, came out looking like Finley, tweed suit and all.
"Okay," he said. "This better be damn good, Reacher."
We went out into the night. I walked over to the car while he locked his cabin door, then he joined me.
"You driving?" he said. Why? I said. You got a problem with that? He looked irritable as hell, glared at the gleaming Bentley. Don't like people driving me, he said. You want to let me drive? I don't care who drives, I said. Just get in the damn car, will you? He got in the driver's side and I handed him the keys. I was happy enough to do that. I was very tired. He started the Bentley up and backed it out of the lot, swung east, settled in for the drive. He went fast, faster than I had. He was a hell of a good driver. So, what's going on? He said to me. I looked across at him. I could see his eyes in the glow from the dash. I figured it out, I said. I know what it's all about. He glanced back again. So are you going to tell me? He said. Did you call Princeton? I asked him. He grunted and slapped the Bentley's wheel in irritation. I was on the phone for an hour, he said. The guy knew a hell of a lot, but in the end he knew nothing at all. What did he tell you? I asked him. He gave me the whole thing, he said. He was a smart guy, history post-grad working for Bartholomew. Turns out Bartholomew and the other guy, Kelstein, were the big noises in counterfeiting research. Joe had been using them for background. I nodded across at him. I got all that from Kelstein, I said. He glanced over again, still irritable. So why are you asking me about it? He said. I want your conclusions, I told him. I want to see where you got to. We didn't get to anywhere, he said. They all talked for a year and decided there was no way Kleiner could be getting so much good paper. That's exactly what Kelstein said, I told him. But I figured it out. He glanced over at me again, surprise on his face. In the far distance, I could see the glow of the prison lights at Warburton. So tell me about it, he said. Wake up and figure it out for yourself, Harvard guy, I said. He grunted again, still irritable. We drove on. We hurtled into the pool of light spilling from the prison fence, passed by the prison approach. Then the fierce yellow glare was behind us. So, start me off with a clue, will you? He said. I'll give you two clues, I said. The heading Joe used on his list, E Unum Pluribus. And then think about what's unique about American currency. He nodded, thought about it, drummed his long fingers on the wheel. E Unum Pluribus, he said. It's a reversal of the U.S. motto, so we can assume it means out of one comes many, right? Correct, I said. And what's unique about American banknotes compared to any other country in the world? He thought about it. He was thinking about something so familiar he wasn't spotting it. We drove on, shot past the stand of trees on the left. Up ahead, a faint glimmer of dawn in the east. What? He said. I've lived all over the world, I said. 6 continents, if you count a brief spell in an Air Force weather hut in Antarctica. Dozens of countries. I've had lots of different sorts of paper money in my pocket. Yen, Deutschmarks, pounds, lira, pesos, wands, francs, shekels, rupees. Now I've got dollars. What do I notice? Finley shrugged. What? He said. Dollars are all the same size, I said. 50s, 100s, 10s, 20s, 5s, and 1s, all the same size. No other country I've seen does that. Anywhere else, the high-value notes are bigger than the small-value notes. There's a progression, right? Anywhere else, the 1 is a small bill, the 5 is bigger, the 10 is bigger, and so on. The biggest value bills are usually great big sheets of paper, but American dollars are all the same size. The $100 bill is the same size as the $1 bill. So? He asked. So, where are they getting their paper from? I asked him. I waited. He glanced out of his window, away from me. He wasn't getting it, and that was irritating him. They're buying it, I said. They're buying the paper for a buck a sheet. He sighed and gave me a look. They're not buying it, for God's sake, he said. Bartholomew's guy made that clear. It's manufactured up in Dalton, and the whole operation is as tight as a fish's asshole. They haven't lost a single sheet in 120 years. Nobody's selling it off on the side, Reacher. Wrong, Finley, I said. It's for sale on the open market. He grunted again. We drove on, came to the turn onto the county road. Finley slowed and swung left, headed north toward the highway. Now the glimmer of dawn was on our right. It was getting stronger. They're scouring the country for $1 bills, I said. That was the role Hubble took over a year and a half ago. That used to be his job at the bank, cash management. He knew how to get hold of cash, so he arranged to obtain $1 bills from banks, malls, retail chains, supermarkets, racetracks, casinos, anywhere he could. It was a big job. They needed a lot of them. They're using bank checks and wire transfers and bogus hundreds, and they're buying in genuine $1 bills from all over the U.S., about a ton a week. Finley stared across at me, nodded. He was beginning to understand. A ton a week, he said. How many is that? A ton in singles is $1 million, I said. They need 40 tons a year. $40 million in singles. Go on, he said. The trucks bring them down to Margrave, I said. From wherever Hubble sourced them, they come into the warehouse. Finley nodded. He was catching on. He could see it. Then they got shipped out again in the air conditioner cottons, he said. Correct, I said. Until a year ago, until the Coast Guard stopped them. Nice new fresh boxes, probably ordered from some cardboard box factory 2,000 miles away. They packed them up, sealed them with tape, shipped them out. But they used to count them first, before shipping them. He nodded again. To keep the books straight, he said. But how the hell do you count a ton of dollar bills a week? They weighed them, I said. Every time they filled a box, they stuck it on a scale and weighed it. With singles, an ounce is worth $30. A pound is worth 480. I read about all that last night. They weighed it, they calculated the value, then they wrote the amount on the side of the box. How do you know? He said. The serial numbers, I said, showed how much money was in the box. Finley smiled a rueful smile. Okay, he said. Then the boxes went to Jacksonville Beach, right? I nodded. Got put on a boat, I said. Got taken down to Venezuela. Then we fell silent. We were approaching the warehouse complex up at the top of the old county road. It loomed up on our left like the center of our universe. The metal siding reflected the pale dawn. Finley slowed. We looked over at the place. Our heads swiveled around as we drove past. Then we swung up the ramp onto the highway, headed north for Atlanta. Finley mashed the pedal, and the stately old car hummed along faster. What's in Venezuela? I asked him. He shrugged across at me. Lots of things, right? He said. Kleiner's Chemical Works, I said. It relocated there after the EPA problem. So, he said. So, what does it do? I asked him. What's that chemical plant for? Something to do with cotton, he said. Right, I said. Involving sodium hydroxide, sodium hypochlorite, chlorine, and water. What do you get when you mix all those chemicals together? He shrugged. The guy was a cop, not a chemist. Bleach, I said. Bleach. Pretty strong. Especially for cotton fiber. So, he said again. What did Bartholomew's guy tell you about currency paper? I asked him. Finley inhaled sharply. It was practically a gasp. Christ, he said. Currency paper is mostly cotton fiber with a bit of linen. They're bleaching the dollar bills. My God, Reacher, they're bleaching the ink off. I don't believe it. They're bleaching the ink off the singles and giving themselves 40 million sheets of genuine blank paper to play with. I grinned at him, and he held out his right hand. We smacked a high five and whooped at each other, alone in the speeding car. You got it, Harvard guy, I said. That's how they're doing it. No doubt about that. They figured out the chemistry, and they're reprinting the blank bills as hundreds. That's what Joe meant. E unum pluribus. Out of one comes many. Out of $1 comes $100. Christ, Finley said again. They're bleaching the ink off. This is something else, Reacher. And you know what this all means. Right now, that warehouse is stuffed full to the ceiling with 40 tons of genuine dollar bills. There's $40 million in there. 40 tons all piled up, waiting for the Coast Guard to pull back. We've caught them with their pants down, right? I laughed happily. Right, I said. Their pants are down around their ankles. Their asses are hanging out in the breeze. That's what they were so worried about. That's why they're panicking. Finley shook his head, grinned at the windshield. How the hell did you figure this out? He asked.